From KQED Public Radio, this is the Capital Notes podcast for Friday, October 1st. I'm John Myers from KQED. Anthony York, the editor of Capital Weekly, blog man for the LA Times, and just a general all-around work guy, although we all, man, this has been a heck of a week, hasn't it?
It has been. It has been. But, yes.
Yes.
I think for a lot of people, including the Whitman family.
Huh? Yeah. And so I think we're going to focus on this podcast, probably not our full-on big giant week of politics, because let's face it, we got a lot to do. We got paying jobs.
Do we now?
And I can't give Anthony, coffee gift cards or anything, but so much longer. Did you not
tote
get
bag.
Those in the mail?
Tote bag.
Well, tote bags are so cliche for public radio. We'll check back in on the ye olde ongoing budget fight next week, even though we hear all kinds of rumbles here sitting on Friday, but you may know more by the weekend, and who the heck knows?
Who the heck?
But let's talk about the governor's race. In particular, let's, who would have thought, I would have thought we would have just talked about the debate on Friday, and then we wake up on Wednesday morning and this whole other saga starts to play out about Meg and the Maid.
Enter Gloria Allred.
And many other cast of characters.
Did you notice that her last name is Allred and she wears Allred? I just figured that one out. I'm a little slow.
I didn't know that. Well, cool. Now I know something new.
If you're going to be a gadfly, you got to have a shtick.
So that obviously dominated a lot of discussion. I mean, we had this debate on Tuesday night at UC Davis, the first debate between Meg Whitman and Jerry Brown. And then, as all of you know, I mean, we don't need to recite all the different data points with this story about Meg Whitman and her ex-housekeeper who turned out to be an undocumented immigrant, and the fracas that has ensued now for days that has really swamped the discussion of the governor's race. Whether we can say that's a good thing or a bad thing, and it's going to depend on your own politics about that, but it's just a fact. It has swamped a lot of the attention and discussion
in
this race.
And what that means come November 2nd, who knows?
Yeah. Well, I don't even know where we get into this whole thing here. I don't know. We're sitting here on Friday, and obviously you're getting this podcast late because we were so wrapped up in all the things that have been going on this week. But we don't really know where this story's going. We have a debate coming on Saturday. Some of you won't hear this till the weekend, so that debate will have happened. I mean, what a hell of a time for a debate with Univision in Spanish and talking about Latino issues.
Yes.
But where do you want to start on this? I mean, what do we do? How do we jump into this? Well, it's such a odd topic.
You know, here I am now, sort of day three with this story. What's interesting is the communication strategy. I mean, if you put this going back to the debate on Tuesday.
Which seems like a year ago.
It does. But for those of us who have ever heard Meg Whitman on The Stump, all of her answers on Tuesday were clearly from her well-worn script. I mean, and that's how she operates.
Can I just say, I mean, it's interesting. I wonder how the public, who don't hear her all the time, perceived
it. Well, that's why I qualified
it. Right, because you and I have heard that speech a lot of times.
But right. If you were listening to what I said.
I know, I just inserted that. Right. Sorry.
Making the explicit point. But, that said, Whitman is not necessarily at her best when she's been knocked off script. And remember the way the voting issue was handled when that first came out last fall. She handled it arguably very poorly. I mean, hard to say that she handled it well. Remember the whole thing at the Republican State Party convention?
Which it was so early in the campaign, you could have said, well, she's really not used to the whole political environment yet.
Right.
And I guess the point you're going to make is that maybe that wasn't the problem, because maybe it's just not good when the script gets changed.
Well, I mean, their team mobilized so quickly, right? Gloria Allred announced she was going to have a press conference Wednesday morning. The Whitman campaign, as we've seen them do before, tried to preempt the Allred press conference with a press call of their own with their attorney and senior spokesman, Rob Stutzman, who's sort of the overlord of the many Whitman spokesmen and women.
Overlord.
Yes. Is that an official job title?
I don't know. Call him up and ask him. Go
ahead. Anyway, I mean that with all due respect.
Means it nicely.
Basically preparing the media for what to expect and letting them know that if the press conference went the way they thought it was going to go, they had documents
Well,
that
and
were
they knew where it was
going to
go.
They knew it. Right.
They couched their words in that conference call, but they knew. They'd known
this exactly
issue for a long
was.
Time. They were already prepared.
And that's the issue, is what should she have done? She obviously knew about this issue at the very latest of June of 2009, when this came to a head, when the housekeeper, Nikki Diaz, came to the Whitmans, said she was there illegally, and the Whitmans fired her within a week. Remember, of course, Whitman by then was already preparing to run for governor.
Already was running, yeah.
Right. And so should this have come out? I mean, there's a school of thought of crisis communications that this should have come out early. But remember, you had Steve Poizner in that primary campaign pounding the issue of illegal immigration. And so it was obviously a calculated risk.
Yeah.
They knew that this was going to come out. And I think that you know, when the election is over, there will be a lot of hemming and hawing, depending on what happens, about whether and how this particular story could and should have been handled differently.
Well, there are three main elements to this that I thought I wanted to talk about in the podcast, and you seem to be kind of going down that path, and we hadn't even had a chance to talk about it yet. One of them is the actual issues at hand itself. But that is one that the Whitman campaign thinks is less important than the second one I'm going to mention, which is the partisan atmosphere around which this became known.
Right.
And the third issue is how the Whitman camp themselves have handled it and how could they have handled it.
Right.
So let's do that one first since you talked about it.
Well,
because
I think we should start with your first one because even though I started with the third, because I do think that the meta issues may be important to the campaigns and to insiders and to reporters. But I don't think that they're as important to voters. I don't think the voters care if it was an orchestrated hit as much. I don't think the voters care about the tactics of the Whitman campaign. I mean, I could be wrong about that.
But I do think – but I think there's a – and let's do that then. So let's talk about the issue itself of the housekeeper and what was known or wasn't known and her immigration status and all that. And I actually think I think that actually ties back to the third one about the Whitman camp because I think it's Meg Whitman herself.
Ties into number two as well.
It does. Yeah. But here's what I was going to talk about it and then you what okay. I was going to say. And that is this, which is that let's assume and we don't know where the facts really lie. We've been presented with documents and copies of documents and assertions and allegations on both sides and trying to whittle through this is just mind-numbing, and I do have a few critiques of the press so far in the way some of this has happened. I mean, when we start talking about lie detector tests and handwriting samples, and again, with all due respect to the journalists who brought these up, I mean, we really are going far afield of what we really need to be talking about here.
But Whitman
took
the bait on
she
that
did.
Stuff. So.
But let me just say this about it, which is that. Let's assume that Ms. Whitman's recounting of this is true, which is that she had no knowledge of this, that she asked the placement company to find her a housekeeper. The placement company gave her a copy of a Social Security card and a driver's license and an immigration form, which maybe wasn't signed by the employer because at that time Meg Whitman wasn't the employer. The agency had vetted Ms. Diaz. I'm just trying to give the Whitman camp the benefit of the doubt to make my point.
Right.
And then this comes up in June when the race has just begun, where the Poizner camp really hasn't started training their guns toward immigration and right-wing issues. I still wonder why Meg Whitman didn't admit it and say it up front and use it as a teachable moment and use it as someone who believes these things are important, found myself in the middle of an immigration system that, frankly, California doesn't work.
Right.
Look, even when you have the best ideas, look what can happen. Now, Ms. Whitman this week said, I didn't want to make Nikki Diaz an example.
Didn't want to sell her
on to that. And those are all fair points. And I know I'm armchair quarterbacking here a little bit.
Right.
But had that happened and had she dealt with it early, before the Poizner camp had really had a chance, you know, in the middle of that primary when it got hot, that would have been a bad time too. But before that primary got hot, and now we'd be here 30-some days out of a general election, it would be old news.
Right.
Wouldn't we be having a different conversation? And yet what happened was is that the entire campaign knew this. I mean, you've got to believe, I don't know this, but you've got to believe right after she fired her, however that happened, she picked up the phone and called her campaign advisors and said, I need to tell you
something. And they were clearly ready to go before they had the documents.
Because as we're saying, they had this preemptory phone conference with the press on Wednesday where they told us she was an undocumented immigrant, but Meg Whitman didn't know that. And so I just go back in history there, and I know that's really convenient for us in the press to do. I totally understand that. But I just wonder how differently could this have been, because I do think that the immigration issue is important here, the issue that we don't have a great system, and that what happens when it's not Meg Whitman, it's someone else who hires someone and has all this documentation and doesn't know that the documentation is false, or gets a letter, and we don't know who got the letter, that says something doesn't match up, and you don't even know the letter's about immigration. It could be something else. And I guess what I'm just saying here is wow, you know, there's an issue here about immigration and about the responsibilities of people and employers and all of this that is much more complicated than the rhetoric of politics.
Right, and I think, but in the and I've had the same thoughts myself today. And I think, to be fair, I mean, go back and imagine if that would have happened. Number one, you would have handed all this play that Whitman has made for the Latino vote was part of her general election strategy to win. Would that have been made impossible if she came out on this issue then? I mean, talking about immigration reform and reasonable immigration reform is one thing. But then wouldn't we have, in the press, to be fair, wouldn't we have accused her of selling out her housekeeper, of making an example out of her? I mean, I think we would. In some ways, it was a catch-22 for the Whitman campaign. They had to make it. And also, I think part of the calculation had to be that they were worried about this as an issue in a closed Republican primary. And you look at the way that campaign shaped up, where immigration emerged as an issue.
She beat him by a huge margin and probably still could have when you look at the way she ran that primary, which was an anti-Poisoner primary, not a pro-Whitman primary.
As it turned out. But remember that. But that was June of 99, June, July. And so before that race had really taken shape. And so I think all of those things, I think, you know, on the one hand, the Whitman campaign must have just looked at this and said, hey, we're damned if we do, we're damned if we don't. Let's just ride this out, because they were so focused on the primary at that point. They weren't thinking about October, although at some point you had to know that this was going to come out. And so
especially when you've let someone go who's worked for you for nine years, I think no one would dispute it was an emotional separation. I mean, Ms. Whitman even says it was tough for them. Ms. Diaz painted as emotional for a different reason. I'm not saying that there's an agreement on the emotion, but everyone clearly senses it was not just some pro forma that I guess what I'm just saying is you had to have known that that given the kind of campaign that was being run, that something was going to come back here.
Although that campaign wasn't being run just yet. I mean, you know, Jerry Brown wasn't even a declared candidate for governor back then. So it's a tough call. I mean, I think I've been talking today to a lot of people who do crisis communications for a living, and they say, hey, look, it's always better to just get this out. We've been through this too many times. They should have learned. And if the Whitman campaign ends up losing this race by 3 or 4 points, if you know, that a lot of the armchair quarterbacking on November 3rd will be
this
and the handling of this issue.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So, and the only other thing I was going to say, because we do need to get to the other point and then get on with our with all of our other work, is I do just want to quickly mention about immigration reform. I mean, again, and we're all focused on a lot of other things, and rightly or wrongly so. But again, look how much more complicated reality is than political rhetoric, because again, if you believe Ms. Whitman's version of events, this can't be an isolated event. I mean, people do have forged documents that someone has done all the due diligence the law tells them to do, and still gets burned about who is and who's not a legal resident.
Right.
So I just, you know, I hope that at some point there is a discussion about how complicated it is to fix the immigration issue in the country.
Yeah,
and it'll take a while because we're all in the middle of the politics right now.
Right.
But there is something there to be said about that.
But, you know, and I think this will sort of lead into, I can't remember if it was the second or the third point.
My second one was the politics.
But it's never the crime. It's always the cover up. Right. And it seems like in that respect, the way this was rolled out, that Gloria Allred knew could kind of anticipate the moves of the Whitman campaign, and they fell right into her trap, and well, we can talk about that.
Let's go right to that. So number two is the politics of this, especially on the other side, not the Whitman team strategy.
The vast
and reaction.
Left-wing conspiracy?
But, well,
oh, no, that's the third. Well, that's the third issue.
You know, well, no. We are talking about the Democratic liberal side of the world here, and the Whitman campaign's strong assertion that this is a calculated political hit done by Democrats, done by the Brown campaign, done by whoever they want to attack, given what time on my watch it is.
The vast left-wing conspiracy.
Yes, exactly. The flip of the Clinton adage from all those years ago. But, I don't know all the facts, but you and I have got to believe that, of course, there is some political element to this because... not only Gloria Allred, but this has been out there for a while, and this didn't just come down the pike on Wednesday and the last week of September just out of happenstance.
Right.
I mean, things come to light, and Allred has never, still to this point as of Friday, still has not talked about why it happened then. She says that Ms. Diaz was referred to her by another attorney,
right,
has said nothing else. Allred has ties to the Democratic Party. Now you could start to have the fight about her ties to Jerry Brown, and I'm not trying to go down that path.
No, this is a product of opposition research. But look, here's a dirty little secret I'm going to let our listener in on.
Oh, come on.
About the way the media works. If you go back and you trace the 10 biggest stories of this campaign that involved anything involving investigation, whether it's Meg Whitman's voting record, whether it's the spinning stuff on Goldman Sachs, whether it's the pushing incident at eBay— I would bet you that 9, if not all 10 of these stories were the products of pre-packaged op research delivered from the opponents to the media.
Whoever those opponents might be.
That's how it works. Yep. Most of the investigative research on candidates' records doesn't get done by the reporters. It gets done by the opposing campaigns.
If for no other reason than we don't have the time and resources to do that.
Or we're all lazy, but that's another podcast.
But point well taken. I mean, we are lazy a lot of times collectively, not you and me, because
we're hardworking
guys. Yeah. But fair enough. But so getting to this issue of the timing, clearly the timing has a
so what? So what?
Exactly. And that was one of the points that the Whitman people have been asked about is like, you know, this is great for you to lament this as partisan politics and a political attack and all of these other things. But at the end of the day, there still are questions here, regardless of whether we were having this discussion in July or October.
Right.
Now, that being said—
And it's your fault that we're not— could have got this out in July.
That being said, I mean, we're really playing a parlor game here for a moment, but I have three different theories that have been rolling around in my head the last few days about why it came out when it did.
Me too. Colonel Mustard with the candlestick in the conservatory.
Yes. And Professor Plum. number one was it came right after the debate, which I felt like watching the debate was not a great debate for Meg Whitman. And I thought, well, you know, if someone wants to go ahead and take a knock at her while she's already struggling to come back to explain a bad performance with the public, this would be a good time. Uh-huh. That was my first theory. I don't like that one anymore.
Me neither. Next.
Okay, thank you. Theory number two is that whoever put it up there knew we were having a Latino-focused debate on Saturday, gubernatorial debate in Fresno, sponsored by Univision, and this is a hell of a time to start talking to Latino voters.
Yes.
You like that one.
Yes.
Here's number three. Vote-by-mail ballots go out on Monday.
Yes.
And we know how important vote by mail is going to be in this election. And now, rather than an October surprise, which is too damn late in this world.
Exactly. It's a September surprise.
We have a surprise that lands right as the ballots go out. Yeah. You like that one, too?
Yeah, the September surprise. Yeah. No, I think that is the timing that it worked out that we were about to start focusing on Latina issues. And also that, you know, money had already moved. The Service Employees Union has launched a large independent expenditure in Spanish to start targeting Latino voters in hopes that some of the Latino vote starts to come home. I mean, Democrats have been concerned about Whitman's inroads with Latino voters, and whether this moves them or not, we'll see. But clearly there was enough concern where even before this stuff erupted, there was going to be a large Spanish language effort to try to get some of that Democratic base, the Latino Democratic base, to the polls and try to get some Latinos who are on the fence or perhaps considering Meg Whitman back into the Democratic column. And so Yeah, I mean, I think that confluence of number two and number three, and maybe maybe a couple other things, just the calendar, what is the reason behind this timing?
Well, the Whitman campaign on Thursday in the conference call they held with reporters, I mean, we've never had so many conference calls with the Whitman campaign,
yes.
Again, tried to assert, you know, as one of their data points said, well, you know, and look how convenient it is that a television ad is up just the very next day talking about this.
They now, recut that. That
I think is not a fair criticism, because you can get an ad up. You can cut an ad awfully quick these days and put it at the television
stations. If you look at that ad, what they did is they took the old Working Californians ad, the Dos Caras, the Two Faces ad that ran earlier this summer. They just spliced in a little piece involving Nikki Diaz, and that was it.
So I don't think that shows any kind of amazing thing there. And you know, and this gets to the final part of this one, which is the whole association with Jerry Brown specifically. Now there's chatter that the Brown campaign, you know, told at least one reporter. I didn't have this conversation with him. Maybe you did. You could tell me that would be news. Oh, I hear she has a housekeeper problem a couple of weeks ago. Of course, then they said that was a rumor they heard, you know, but we go back to even Brown being videotaped in an event one time talking about, you guys need to fight all the fights for me, you union people, or whatever he said, I'm paraphrasing.
I need you to attack. Yeah.
So, I mean, I think Brown and his camp are probably smart enough to keep their fingerprints off of this. In the world of Democrats or anti-Whitman, or I don't know who you even talk about, the vast left-wing conspiracy. But I think it's hard to talk about this as a Jerry Brown plot.
How does that change it?
It doesn't. But we're in the politics part right now. So just because for the hell of it.
Right.
But I think that's a little harder. I think it is not hard to see this as being pushed forward by forces favorable to Jerry and unfavorable to Meg for all the reasons we've mentioned.
In the classical sense, this is a conspiracy.
Yeah. Timing, Allred, all of those things. Now, one of the things I want to say about Gloria Allred, I don't know the lady, so I'm just being careful here, but just watching her through the years, you know, people talk about, you know, she's really in this because she's a big Democratic supporter, which she is. She's a Democratic delegate to the convention a few years ago, giving some money, yada, yada. But couldn't we also say that she really might be in it for the publicity for herself?
Shocking.
In which case, there are whole kinds of motives here that are less than civic duty minded.
You think?
Yeah.
Yes.
So number three.
Well, go ahead. I will say one thing. You know, this whole thing about the letter, and well, we never saw the letter from the Social Security Administration saying we had to take care of it. We don't remember seeing such a letter, and Whitman rolled, you know, when they rolled the candidate out herself Thursday morning in Santa Monica to say we've never seen this letter.
For the longest press conference she's ever given in her life.
Well, the one thing that kind of got swept under the rug, no pun intended since we're talking about housekeepers, but the one thing that got swept under the rug was the moment that where Whitman said, and this was going to be the spin before the handwriting emerged, the spin from the Whitman campaign was going to be, well, Nikki took all the mail in. She must have stolen the letter.
I caught that moment too, right? And it was a very interesting moment we don't see our mail.
And not only that, in my mind, that changes it a little bit. I mean, I get it. You're being defensive, but then you've got to be, you've got to be careful about attacking her, about attacking Nikki. I think. Miss Diaz.
Which Whitman was, I think, in fairness, was careful in other areas, talking about we love Nikki, very painful. I think Nikki's being used.
That was day one. Right. We feel sorry for her that she's being manipulated. Yeah. But then day two, when she must have intercepted the letter, you know, that's something a little different. And I think that's something that we'll see if any of these campaigns seize upon that particular moment. Because it turns out that was not true. You know, and sort of calling someone a liar it's a little bit, it's nuanced, and maybe it's just me, but it feels a little different. And it was just one step over the line, maybe something
and so much of this story continues to garner interest, attention, commentary, whatever, because there are multiple layers. There's politics, there's class.
Yeah,
there's immigration,
ethnicity.
There are a lot of different elements here that are that keep lapping over.
Absolutely.
And the Whitman campaign is very angry that the story continues to get play, and I understand that for their own reasons. But at the same point, there are lots of layers here, and it is not just about the Democratic attack.
And that's the thing that makes this such a political trap for Whitman. Even her defense, even her plausible defense, hey, look, you know what? This letter may have come in. The truth is, Griff is a brain surgeon at Stanford. I'm the CEO of eBay. You know, we looked at it. We didn't vet everything. This woman was spending time with our kids, but we never talked to her about her immigration status. You know, Whitman said that on day one that she was like a member of the extended family, which I thought was a real interesting construction there, extended family, but that perhaps is another podcast. But it really does boil down to this class issue. Hey, look, she was the help. We didn't really pay attention because I think that defense, totally plausible, totally understandable to a lot of voters out there, that could hurt her, you know, because she doesn't have a common touch.
Well,
and it reinforces the Democratic attack, the sort of, for lack of a better phrase,
right.
I hate the phrase class warfare, but kind of the class warfare.
Well,
attack,
but and I also think it's, I think you made a great point that it's a trap, because if you say we didn't have really that kind of relationship, then that is a problem there. If you said we had the relationship, which she hinted at several times, like, I knew all about her kids, they came to stay over here, you know, we knew this, we knew that, we talked about our families. Well, and then this never came up, that she was born in Mexico, and how did she come to the country legally?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, then if you admit we had a close relationship, then the trap is, well, you had a close relationship and you didn't talk about this.
Right.
So you're kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Exactly. It's one of those, you can either say she was a member of the family or say you didn't know she was an undocumented immigrant, but not both. And that's, you know, that's the problem, I think, going forward for the Whitman campaign.
And now let's briefly hit my third one in my list of different ways that the story plays, and that is the whole Whitman campaign element and pushback and fighting to get back on track, because this has been 4 or 5 days, and it ain't over yet, of them being buffeted by the winds of politics, and rather than trying to control the narrative of these events and the things that they have done for months and months and months.
Right.
They knew about this for a long time. We all know that. They gave us the documents before Gloria Allred came out on Wednesday and said it. They clearly knew it. They decided to not reveal the issue earlier, all the reasons we've talked about. Part of this to me, and you know, I know this is too much punditry perhaps, but part of this to me does feel like a campaign that felt as though they were running a different kind of politics, and they didn't have to play crisis communications. What do you do? What do you do about this? They had more money. They had more resources. They had more. They were going to shape the way that the gubernatorial campaign ran. They were going to run a campaign that had never been seen before. In some ways, thinking as though the laws of political gravity don't apply to this candidate in this campaign.
Maybe they don't.
And now here's the painful parallel. Didn't we see some of that with Arnold Schwarzenegger as well? With some of the same campaign staff, for different reasons. He was an international celebrity. She's fabulously wealthy and can control the narrative through the media. But again, the laws of political gravity come back to affect a lot of people. Politics is politics, whether you're rich or famous a lot of times.
But can you really think, I mean, there were allegations of sexual misconduct that surfaced right before the recall.
With Gloria Allred.
Yeah, how about that? And Schwarzenegger, in a very noncommittal way, sort of cop to it, saying where there's smoke, there's probably fire. And that kind of diffused the issue.
But it also diffused it because Arnold, as a celebrity, as a guy had a reputation, is kind of wild and crazy.
That's just it. And I think, again, the Kitty Kelly armchair psychologist portrait, it sort of speaks to a lack of personal connection that voters have with Meg Whitman. I'm not sure they have it with Jerry Brown either, because Jerry Brown's kind of like the crazy uncle in the closet.
You raise a great point, because their connection with Arnold had nothing to do with politics. It had to do with movies, entertainment. They had felt like they had something with this guy. She's a brand new commodity for them.
I mean, people have a sense of Brown, right? He's like this
for better or for worse.
Iconoclastic, you know. He's like a hummingbird, right? Difficult to focus, will say what's on his mind, kind of an interesting guy. I can see I'm getting myself into trouble here, so I'll stop.
Hummingbird, I'll try to, anyway.
But with Whitman, I just don't, there's never any personal touch. from her. And I, you know, at an event you were at a couple of weeks ago, I remember asking her about the poverty rate in California, for example. And there was no empathy at all. It was straight to talking points, straight to, well, my message to people in poverty is I'm going to cut business taxes. And it was just kind of, you can imagine what a politician like Bill Clinton could do with something like that. I mean, just, you know, bite his lower lip and hit it out of the park. He'd get to his talking points, but he'd give you a little, you know, a little Southern empathy first.
Yeah.
And voters want a little of that, I think. And neither of these two candidates are very empathetic.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, you know, to be fair, Jerry Brown's never been on a breadline, so to speak, the proverbial breadline. He's never been, you know, needing for money.
No.
His avowals of poverty were all self-inflicted, not inflicted on him by the world, Mother Teresa and Jesuit training.
And the Pope let him out of those, so.
Yeah, but the point is, I mean, Jerry Brown is no poor man.
No.
But there is a difference that you have picked up on here, especially, again, when it's someone who's foray into politics has been pushed forward by business and financial success. There's a different background narrative.
Brown's aloofness is more of an intellectual aloofness, you know, where you kind of the limousine liberal approach a little bit, where, you know, somebody is sort of there on the issues, even if they haven't necessarily been there themselves. Whitman's aloofness is a more sort of, it's a class thing, but it's also a corporate thing, I think, you know, that, I mean, that's the culture she comes from. And that's why this, just bringing this full circle, that's the trap of it, because ultimately that's her defense on the maid issue. And so it'll be interesting to see how this plays out over the next few days, whether this matters,
whether it
doesn't.
This debate in particular.
And what comes next.
Yeah, the debate. I mean, you know, you've got to think that in the debate, it's got to come front and center. I would think Whitman's going to come out loaded with a comment about it just to get in front of it, maybe, in the debate.
I'm sure the speechwriters are working frantically.
Yeah, and then we'll see where we go from there. And, of course, as we said, ballots start going out next week.
And I'm sure any household help that Jerry Brown has ever had is being, you know, searched for and interviewed by Whitman operatives.
Does he have enough possessions to need to be picked up and cleaned
and
moved?
He lives up in the hills now, man.
But I still feel like it's probably some huge house with nothing in it.
Actually, no, there was somebody.
Maybe that's just the persona he puts off.
I believe in Capital Weekly, I know Malcolm McLaughlin had unearthed something about somebody who donated janitorial services to the Brown campaign, showed up in his expenditure reports. It's somebody who he's known for 30 years. It's like one of these Jerry Brown stories. I'll get some details and maybe I'll send you a link if we wrote about it. If not, I'll have the story for next week.
Hey, there you go. All right, well, we have expended all we know about Meghan the Maid for now.
And gone beyond it a little bit.
Gone beyond it a little. And, you know, I know you, for those folks who want to talk about the budget, well, you know, we're still watching
next week. Next week's your week.
There you go. For Anthony York from Capital Weekly, I'm John Myers from KQED. We'll see you next time.